Hello and welcome to another edition, a new edition, a resurrected edition of the Capital Notes podcast. It's been a long time.
It has been, but how fitting. Easter week, here we are, back again, like we were never gone.
Once again, that is the ever quotable Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly. I'm John Myers from KQED, and if you are listening to this podcast, first and foremost, thank you. Because the podcast has been gone for 12 weeks, 11 weeks, and that's all my fault, or more precisely, the fault of having a 10-week-old daughter and being gone on paternity leave, and the lack of sleep, and then coming back to work and still having no sleep. And so now we're starting the podcast again. Well, we hope to be current. Is that fair?
Yeah, but you'll be a little punchier than normal. You'll be
maybe perhaps funnier, yes, and wittier then as a result.
Or more abstract from the lack of sleep.
If I'm more abstract, I think people are really in for some pain and suffering listening to this. Anyway, so we're back talking about the latest in California politics and public policy. We thought we'd do an entire show about what happened over the last 12 weeks. No. Okay.
Yes.
Now we're not going to do that. We're going to move forward. We're going to assume the last 12 weeks never happened like that.
Like the special election. In 2005.
Well, I was going to say the season of Dallas, like where it was a dream, but yours is much more appropriate for a political podcast.
We'll just pretend it never happened, and we're now both sitting slightly further to the left than we were before.
Yes.
Before we left.
So. Yes, as the man in the corner office felt afterwards. Yes. So first and foremost, while I was gone, the budget was a fun, exciting topic of conversation around the state capitol and our multi-billion-dollar budget deficit for the coming fiscal year and the multi-billion-dollar deficit in the current fiscal year. So a lot of things happened on that. We know some mid-year cuts were approved by the legislature. We're in the middle of the debate about a new budget. Long story short, has anything really happened in the last few weeks? It doesn't seem like it.
Well, I think it's still jockeying for position. I mean, one of the big things that's happened is pink slip notices have gone out to 20,000 school employees,
right,
most of them teachers across the state. And that's based on the governor's budget, which nobody thinks is real. There's these 10% cuts across the board that the governor proposed back in January.
People don't think they're real. For what reason?
Well, the governor's basically said as much. He said, hey, look, here's my proposal. He kind of punted over to the legislature and say, okay, here's my proposal. We're just going to cut everything across the top 10%. Let's see what you guys got. So Democrats now are, I mean, the battle lines are being drawn. We're seeing the Education Coalition rallying and protesting these cuts and trying to humanize some of these proposed cuts. And, you know, in terms of where we are, the fundamental question on where we are in terms of are we going to increase revenues, whether it be fees or taxes or closing loopholes, whatever sort of terminology you want to use? I think that fundamental question is still on the table and unresolved.
Hmm. And, you know, it was interesting watching from afar, also known as not sleeping and holding a baby and watching TV and reading the internet. The way that the beginning of this all played out with, you know, as you said, with the 10% across the board cuts, which the governor then was quoted in a meeting with the Sacramento Bee folks where he said, I was rattling everybody's cage in the legislature, which seemed as though they weren't serious, as you were talking about.
Right.
And then this whole notion of how he feels about the ledge analyst's proposed budget and this notion of repealing tax credits and whether he endorsed those particular ones or the idea of repealing some tax credits.
Right.
I mean, it really does feel like that everything is still out there. It's just this huge, fluid, gelatinous thing, and nothing has really started to solidify, even with the rhetoric being very strong about we have to do something now.
Well, the ledge analyst quit in the meantime. She announced her resignation.
She hasn't quit yet.
She has announced her intention to leave. And maybe that should be more revealing than anything else. But I think, you know, this discussion that you were alluding to, the ledge analyst proposed eliminating a number of tax credits, one of which was the dependent tax credit for children that you would now qualify for.
Thank you.
For the first time.
Yes, for a change.
If most people have their way, Liz Hill wants to take that away from you. But and the governor, you know, said something that indicated he might support that cut, and there was a huge uproar. I mean, I think it just shows when you get into these questions of how to increase revenues, what combination of revenue increases and spending cuts you're going to make, there's still no consensus. And whether this changes with new legislative leadership, we also got some new leaders while you were gone, leaders-elect.
Yes. Karen Bass, who will replace Fabia Nunez as the Speaker of the Assembly.
Sometime.
Sometime. And Daryl Steinberg, who will replace Don Parada as the pro tem of the state Senate.
Right.
And
Dave Cogdill.
And Dave Cogdill, who will replace Dick Ackerman as the leader of the Republicans in the state Senate.
Right. Right. So
three out of four.
Three out of the big five.
Leaving Mike Vallines of Fresno as the only remaining big four.
Right.
Legislative leader.
The elder statesman of the group with, 3 years of legislative experience.
World of term limits. Right. Yes.
I think the dynamic, it's still too early, despite all the work that's been done, the governor is now on his roadshow around the state, campaigning for his priorities, as is the speaker has been out. Don Parada has been out with members of his caucus. But they're still sort of sketching priorities and not really talking about comprehensive solutions yet.
So. And I wonder what's your take? I mean, on these roadshows that the governor's doing, because I wrote a posting last week online where I couldn't help but listen to the language of it, and it was this really interesting fine line balancing between, working with the legislature and working with the people in Sacramento, and it's not their fault. You know, this is it's all the formulas and state budgets, the state budget that have gotten us where we are. And then a small snippet of language that sounded like the 2005 special election.
Right.
And even 2004 when he went on the roadshow and beat the legislature over the head about not working on the budget. You know, he talked, I think it was last week in one of these town hall meetings, he said something about, why are we punishing the people? We should be punishing Sacramento.
Right.
You know, and there was a slight edge of that verbiage in there. And it really is a very fine line between the Schwarzenegger of 2006 and the Schwarzenegger of 2005,
right,
so to speak. You know, I mean, it really is the two sides of the way the governor has approached his problem with dealing with legislators over his tenure.
Yeah, and I mean, there is an inconsistency that works both ways. I mean, and we see it flare up in times when frustration peaks, and something tells me that there's some of those times ahead. I mean, look, we're all sort of waiting for the May revision coming up here in a couple of months, when the state actually receives some tax money and starts counting real hard numbers. And I think, everyone's sort of hoping for a miracle, although
nothing looks like that. I was going to say, talking about real numbers, every month we get this bulletin from the State Department of Finance,
right,
and concurrent numbers from the State Comptroller's Office that continue to show revenues below projections. Every single month that is seen for the last few months, we keep getting this below projections for the month, we're below projections for the year, which just sounds like when we get, full numbers, as you're talking about with tax returns after April 15th, it could just be really, really ugly.
Right. And there's going to have to be some give and take on both sides. There are probably going to be cuts deeper than the cuts that Democrats are comfortable with. There will probably be some kind of revenue increase, fees or closing loopholes, whatever you want
to
call it.
Do you really think so with Republicans in the legislature? Do you really think you can change the dynamic from last summer?
I don't know. There have been some signs from Dave Cogdill, who will be taking over for Dick Ackerman, that he may be more amenable to closing loopholes than. But one man's loophole is another person's tax credit or. The short answer is I have no idea. How's that for insightful analysis?
The short answer out of you? Is there a short answer?
Well, that was the long-winded way of giving you the short answer, which is I have no idea.
Well, and to throw another little bomb in the whole thing, and I'm not sure it has, I'm not sure what, nothing like a reporter saying the following. I'm not really sure if this means anything, but.
Go with it.
I'm not really sure if this means anything, but I can't help but be fascinated by the fact that in this round of budget negotiations, you could ostensibly argue that you don't be touching the microphone, Anthony.
It's not a microphone.
You're very sensitive. If you just heard a noise, it was Anthony running into the microphone with his chin.
Yeah.
But in this round of budget negotiations this year, whereas you have had five people in the room before, which was four legislative leaders and the governor, I mean, are you really going to have nine people in the room effectively this time or something? You've got a speaker and a speaker elect, a pro tem and a pro tem elect, a Senate Republican leader and a Senate Republican leader elect. I mean, nobody's saying that there's daylight between those incoming leaders and the outgoing leaders, but it's a strange dynamic because you alluded to it a moment ago. We don't really know when anybody's taking over. We don't know when right. Speaker Nunez and pro tem Parada and Leader Ackerman are technically no longer being leaders.
But the reality is, especially in this term limits era, I mean, it's important who's sitting in the room, but, you know, the staffs are not going to fundamentally change. The budget staffs are not going to change. Mm-hmm. Not drastically, anyway. There might be. So, you know, I think there will be some there'll be a lot of continuity. You know, I don't know. I'm hard-pressed to, you know, for anyone to tell me the ideological difference between Karen Bass and Fabian Nunez. I know that there are some stylistic differences. You know,
but stylistic differences do matter sometimes in budget negotiations.
They do for closing.
I mean, let's look at the era of John Burton as pro tem of the Senate and the way he would blow up in those meetings, we're told, and, you know, then people have been more conciliatory. So style matters when you're getting to the budget.
When you get to closing time, we're not there yet. And I think a lot of the
long from it.
Yeah, so, you know, and I think that those timelines will have to be worked out here in the next few weeks. I'm sure probably people out there who know more than we do about when, you know, I've heard anecdotally that the speaker maybe had talked about hanging on till the end of the year, now may be interested in getting out before the budget. You know, it's all grist for the rumor mill, but, you know, it'll have to work itself out in the next couple of weeks.
Well, and then there are going to be lots of little things that come along on the budget, and one that is not large when you're examining the entire budget process will be interesting, will play itself out on Tuesday, the day that this podcast will be up and running for most of the people who hear it, though maybe we'll get it on the blog tonight, which is that Gavin Newsom, the mayor of San Francisco, is coming to Sacramento tomorrow, Tuesday, or today if you're listening to this on Tuesday, speaking to the Sacramento Press Club, where he is going to announce that he's heading up a group of people, I think, as I understand, or a group of stakeholders mm-hmm. to file a lawsuit challenging the Medi-Cal provider rate cuts that were put forth by the legislature recently as part of that mid-year deal. And again, right. For those of you who don't speak budget ease all the time, we're talking about the amount of money that healthcare folks get back, the doctors essentially get back treating Medi-Cal patients. They get reimbursed from the state.
Right.
And those reimbursement rates have been a big issue in the healthcare debate and before, because if you don't have a lot of doctors participating in Medi-Cal right now because they're not getting a full reimbursement of the money it takes to treat these people.
Right. And all those dollars that the state provides, they're matched with federal dollars. And that was a big issue in the healthcare debate last year. Remember, there was going to be a new fee on hospitals that was going to go exclusively towards raising the reimbursement rates that doctors and hospitals get from the state, and that was going to be matched with federal dollars.
So Newsom stepping into this, I think if nothing else, raises the profile of the issue probably and gives it a person who becomes the the person who's out there who can get attention differently than interest groups can get attention.
Right.
He can command cameras and reporters more often than they can.
Yeah, and we'll see. I'm sure he'll get some play out of it this week. You know what that means for the final decision on Medi-Cal reimbursement rates. Don't know, but it's a sign of sort of what's changed since our last podcast when we were talking about increasing Medi-Cal reimbursement rates
right.
in this healthcare deal that had passed the Assembly, and now we're talking about, you know, cuts that have already been made and more cuts to come. So.
It almost makes you wonder as whether all the discussion last year about you had to do health care then because the window was going to close may have in fact been true in that case, because now there is no ability maybe to go back and deal with that because the budget is so bad.
So you leave for a few weeks, John, and the whole world goes to holy hell.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm glad that I have that effect on people.
Well, welcome back.
Well, the other things that have changed since we've left, since transitioning out of the budget, is that we're getting close to another election, of course.
Speaking of holy hell.
Speaking of holy hell. Well, yeah. I don't think we can talk about holy hell.
Is that a paradox? Well, it's like the state budget.
Yeah. Right. But as we're in an election year, 2008 being an election year and a primary coming up in June, and we're coming back to people running for elected office in the legislature. And as we know, with the way that the maps are drawn these days, the primary really is the contested election in a lot of these districts around the state, because they are drawn to favor one part or the other pretty strong. Redistricting is another podcast, folks. We'll talk about that another time. But that's Anthony. That's not me. That's not Steve Poizner or somebody else. That's once again, Anthony's gone. So apologies to the insurance commissioner. But let's talk about some of these primary races that are shaping up. You've done some coverage in Capital Weekly. Some pretty interesting battles around the state.
Yeah, well, and you know, a lot of the biggest battles are in seats where Democrats actually, where there will be contested races in the fall. One down in Imperial County, in Imperial and Riverside County, a seat currently held by a Republican, Bonnie Garcia. Assembly seat. There's another assembly seat held by Shirley Horton down in Chula Vista, the San Diego area. Those two seats both have very hot Democratic primaries, and they're going to be high on Democrats' target list in November. These were seats that were drawn for Democrats that Democrats lost 6 years ago, and now they feel that, you know, hopefully with a strong presidential candidate at the top of their ticket, they're optimistic that they can actually pick up some seats. Now they're going to have to play defense in the Central Valley and the in that Shafter area where Nicole Parra is leaving, and the mother of Senator Dean Flores is running against Danny Gilmore, who almost beat Parra last time.
And did I hear right that there was an unusual endorsement in that race, or
not
something like that?
Not quite an endorsement. It was a pat on the back.
Suffice it to say, there's not that there've been. There haven't been a great relationship between the Parra family and the Flores.
The Parras and the Floreses are kind of the Hatfields and McCoys of the Central Valley.
I knew you were going there.
Yeah, well, you know,
obvious metaphor
to explain it to our three listeners.
We used to have eight. Now only have three because we were on the delay.
To you. Yeah.
Thanks to me, right? Yeah. Thanks to paternity leave. Yeah. But even, you know, you've talked about a few that are just coming on the radar of people about primaries that are contested. But let's talk about some other electoral politics in June that are going to be interesting. And I can't help ignore the 3rd Senate District.
That's going to be
with the bloodbath, I guess we really would call it, between Carol Migdon, the incumbent from San Francisco, Mark Leno, the incumbent assemblyman trying to move to the Senate, and Joe Nation, the former assembly member from Marin County, who's looking to move to the Senate. You've got a three-way Democratic primary in the heart of a very blue part of California. I mean, it's becoming very what's the proper description of how this
nasty
thing? Okay, fair enough.
Nasty.
Migdon being fined by the Fair Political Practices Commission this past week for some campaign things there.
Right.
Leno been hot on her tail. Nation, who entered the race late. Quite a mess up there.
Yeah, and it, you know, three prominent Democrats, and the question is to, you know, what the political calculation is to. Do two San Franciscans in the race, Leno and Migdon, does that help Nation? Two men in the race, Nation and Leno, help Migdon? Do two homosexuals in the race help Nation? You know, Leno and Migdon are both gay.
In other words, who splits whose constituency?
And that's ultimately, I think, going to be who wins this thing by default, and probably with, you know, 35% of the vote. You know, it's been a nasty race. It will only get more so as Election Day approaches. Mm-hmm. Another big Senate race, Fran Pavley, the former assemblywoman, running against Assemblyman Lloyd Levine down in the west side of Los Angeles and San Fernando Valley. Pavley was the original author of AB 32, the global warming law. The carbon emissions law that passed, was that 2 years ago now? I'm losing track.
That's right.
I'm losing track. So, I mean, I think those two on the Senate side are going to be, you know, and there's a Republican primary, Russ Bogue and John Benoit. That one's gotten kind of nasty, too, down in the Riverside area.
And then ones that aren't necessarily primaries in that sense, but have caught my attention again as a new father sitting at home reading Rough and Tumble. Number one is the qualification of the recall against Jeff Denham in the Central Valley, which is just which has so many different layers of fascination if you're a political junkie. I mean, you know, there's the whole resurgence of what happened with the budget last year. There's the notion that the district was theoretically drawn for a Democrat and Denham won the race. There's the, you know, what do you make of the relationship now over this year's budget when you've got Don Parada and other Senate Democrats gunning for Jeff Denham's seat. But, you know, Jeff Denham has been one of those votes people have always looked at, you know, in terms of trying to get a vote, which now appears completely unlikely, right, till hell freezes over. That one has just got layers of interesting little subplots in it.
And that dynamic fundamentally changed, you know, when Denham was reelected for the final for the first time, mm-hmm. but elected to his second Senate and final Senate term, no longer had to play to moderates in his district, and is now running for lieutenant governor in 2010, and has to win a closed Republican primary. That's a very different audience. Mm-hmm. So Denham was among those who held out. He was one of the members of the Senate Republican caucus who held out and helped the budget standoff go into September last year. Hmm. Since that relationship, the congeniality between the Democrats and Denham has broken down, they've opted instead for all-out war.
Well, and you have to wonder, too, given the dynamics of voter registration in that district, whether there could be some calculation that, you know, the Democrats have nothing to lose by trying to get back that seat now rather than waiting another 2 years until Denham's termed out.
Right.
You know, you go for him now, and if you're lucky and you pick him off, you've got somebody in there who's an incumbent.
Well, that's what it might take to get a budget out of the Senate this year, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll see.
And then the mirror, the yin to the yang of people who are seen, senators who are seen on the Republican side as were swing votes at one time, or always were always talked about it. Now, of course, Denham is not anymore. Is Abel Maldonado on the Central Coast, who I understand doesn't have a Democratic opponent,
right?
And
right.
is running unopposed. And that has gotten the Democratic, the lefty blogosphere worked up in a lot of ways because they went back. And did you read this? When they went back and pulled a quote of Pro Tem Paradas during the budget thing and saying, you know, that Maldonado's a stand-up guy and I'd go knock on doors for him if I had to, you know, it makes you wonder if that's not somewhat of a, you know, thank you to Maldonado for being the one Republican who stood up for the budget early last
right.
summer.
And that there were a lot of whispers about that last year. You know, Maldonado was the 26th vote for the in the Senate for the budget. You need 27 to get one out. You know, and I guess the calculation that Don Parada and other Democrats are making is that Maldonado will be there again for them this year. You know, we'll see. I mean, whether that was a miscalculation, I think if it's anyone's problem, it might become Daryl Steinberg's problem instead of Don Parada's problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, to be continued probably sometime in late August.
One to keep following.
Yeah.
And of course, the only other big thing in just pure politics that's coming right down the pike this week is the state Democrats are meeting in San Jose this coming weekend,
right.
For their annual convention. The only headline at this point is that former President Bill Clinton is going to be speaking to the convention on Sunday. Perhaps it's a wooing of superdelegates or who knows? I mean, are you getting any read? Is this a continuation of the national dialogue about the Clinton-Obama fracas?
I think it is, although, you know, part of me can't help but wonder what would have happened if California's primary was still in June. You know, imagine the attention we'd be getting right now. It might be a good thing for anybody who watches television. We don't have to wade through those political commercials.
You could depend on how you characterize it, but we would have possibly been the decider of the Democratic nomination, given how many delegates we were talking about.
But then again, I guess Obama's lead would be that much bigger since Clinton won relatively comfortably in California in
but he
February.
Still wouldn't have enough for the nomination.
No, and he won't when this is over. Yeah. I mean, it looks like, you know, Denver in August will be, well, who knows what will be going on then, but all indications now are that it's going to be full of intrigue.
Well, and I think this wooing of superdelegates, you know, is a story that's getting played out nationally, but again, it is happening in California. The host of our show, Scott Schaefer of the California Report, did a piece this past week where he tried to talk to some superdelegates about what they're doing, and they are faced, you know, they're no different than their colleagues around the country. Superdelegates from California faced about this dilemma of what do you do if you're uncommitted so far? Do you support the national popular vote or delegate tally and go behind Obama? Do you weigh factors that the Clinton campaign are asking you to do?
What happened in your district or in your state?
Yeah.
You know, how do you make that? And, you know, Scott could have asked his state senator, Carol Migdon, who is among the unpledged superdelegates in California.
Well, and Nancy Pelosi, who of course is the big player that she is as Speaker of the House, and has said she'll be neutral, but who knows?
Yeah, and you know, there's been some talk about Pelosi and possibly Al Gore, maybe John Edwards being involved in trying to broker some kind of peace, although
we don't spread rumors on the podcast, though.
That wasn't a rumor. I read it in the New York Times. It must be true.
It must be true.
That's right.
Notwithstanding the New York Times' challenges over the last few weeks.
Hey, if somebody takes the time to put it down in black and white, it must be true.
Yeah, spoken like a newspaper guy.
That's right.
Well, there's a lot going on. So that means we've got a lot to keep watching. We got budget stuff to watch. We got politics to watch. We've got a whole bunch of other public policy stuff we didn't even talk about this time. We'll talk about another time. All kinds of crazy bills again.
So we'll get back together in 12 weeks and do this again?
Yeah, this is the once every 12-week podcast.
Right. The quarterly.
It'll develop podcast. Quite a following. There'll be like, you know, like the yearly Coe's convention in where he's got all those people. There'll be four of us. Our three listeners and you and me.
That's
having
good.
A beer.
Now we've lost Adam Mendelsohn in the governor's office. I don't know who's listening.
Well, I'm sure one of them will get back to us after you've asked that question. All right, well, we'll reconvene this next week. We'll talk some more politics. For Anthony York, I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.